Hi, guys.
Hello.
Welcome to Etta Arlene's Spirit Cast. If you're new to this podcast, we talk about all things related to mindfulness, magic, astrology, tarot, Reiki, meditation, anything in that realm. Today's episode, we have another awesome guest. Her name is Kara Jean Roberts. This episode is all about breathing.
We're super excited to have Kara back on the show. She's been on it twice before this. So if you have not listened to the previous episodes, we have that link down below. We're so grateful to always connect with her and excited to get in this conversation.
Yeah. So before we start, do you want to tell them where they can find us at?
So you can follow us over on X. We still do tweet a lot. It's @edpro_pgh. We are on Instagram, Threads, TikTok, pretty much everywhere under Etta Arlene. Go give us a follow. We are definitely more active on Instagram and X. So those are the primary. Then you can go to our YouTube channel where we post Reiki-infused videos multiple times a week. That is at Arlene as well. Go like and subscribe. And you can go to our website, edarlene.com. Sign up for our email list on edarlene.com/Reiki. And get a free Reiki session on the first of every month at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You have to sign up for that list to get access to that free Reiki. So go sign up. And then if you like what we do and would like to support us further, you can become a patron, or you can go to our store at arlene.com/shop and check out our oracle card decks, books, and the other awesome things that we do. You can book a tarot reading with Etta, and you can book Reiki sessions with us. I think I covered everything, and thank you to our current patrons and everybody who has donated. You can also donate. We have links down below, I think, or you can find it on one of our social media. All right.
All right, so we're going to get in the episode.
Okay. All right, guys, we are back with the amazing Kara Jean Roberts. Thank you for joining us again.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here again with you. I love hanging out with you.
It's always a vibe.
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking 40 minutes prior.
Yeah, prior to interview.
Yeah.
It's always a delight.
Thank you. I feel the same. This is the third time now. I feel like I've known you for so much longer, which is always a good feeling. You know that there's some soul bonding going on somewhere in the tapestry when that happens. And I'm happy to get straight into what I'd love to share today, or feel free to, you know, take me in a different direction to start.
No, absolutely. Let's just get into it.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, we've had, you know, some lovely conversations in the other two podcasts on your Spirit Cast and all the great guests that you continue to have. It's really wonderful. But today I would really like to share coherent breathing. And there's many reasons for this. I think we all know how foundational breath is to living. No breath, no life. But what's interesting to me is that breath is this great untapped resource. And what I have noticed, you know, I say there's no social injustice in breathing, and it's true to an extent. However, the power of our breath is something that gets easily disconnected. And so it's all very well and good if we have access to resources, or we have some sort of referral pathway that will help us with improving our breathing, which is going to improve so much of our physiology, so much of how we feel, our energy levels, just that sense of intimacy with ourselves as well. And so this is why I'm kind of really surfing this wave of coherent breathing. And I'll give a little intro into it. And I will reference Stephen Elliott. He signs his emails Steve, so I'm going to call him Steve Elliott now that I'm in touch with him, which brings me great joy as well. So he's a life scientist and engineer. He's based in the States, and he's been doing probably more than two decades of research into coherent breathing. So he's kind of the guy, we might say, who's dubbed this the name coherent breathing. But we also know in all the many braids we travel in that all the ancient and perennial wisdoms refer to breath. So this is nothing new. Of course, it's nothing new. For as long as we're in a body, we breathe. But what's amazing is to have a foundational guide to access that autonomy for yourself. So I'll start maybe with giving the first three kind of key levers or key foundations of coherent breathing. And then, you know, we can kind of have a chat about those and where or why they might be difficult. And I can't remember if we've touched upon this last time or not, but we can go into a lot more detail this time so people can listen and feel, oh, okay, maybe I can explore this. I can launch my own research assignments around my own respiration, which is ultimately my life force. So the first one is breathing through the nose. The second one is taking the breath down. So this is essentially coming more into mobility and motility in the diaphragm, which is the key breathing muscle. And the third one is an even rate and rhythm. So if we conjure up the feeling of the word coherence, for example, because a word is never just a word, it's all that's conjured up around that word. Having a sense of flow, so getting into a flow with our own breath, and you'll know this with your own artistry or your Reiki, or maybe you're just out on a walk one day and you just land in this deep sense of connection. It's called the flow state. And the coherence is helping us breathe in a wave. And so much of the universe exists as a wave. And what's incredibly beautiful is that when we tap into this coherence within our own breathing, that we're starting to breathe in coherence with the Earth's resonance itself, which is a measurable resonance of 7.83 hertz, which even that alone is just, imagine if more people were breathing coherently. I mean, it's a big utopia to think, can the whole world breathe coherently? Because it's so vast and nuanced and complex. But I think, can more people breathe coherently? Let's just start with that. And even noticing how we're breathing at the moment, because breathing through the nose can be challenging. Taking the breath into the belly can be challenging. Having an even rate and rhythm can be challenging. So I think it's a really wonderful place, not only to begin. So if people are brand new to breath work, that's great. But also, I was teaching yoga for several years before I came across this and started to dive much more into the deeper aspects of it, and why it's so useful and compelling. Because we know when we breathe slower and deeper, we feel better. It might not be immediate. It might be, it might not. Depends on what our current state is, because we can access many different states. But really, it's about having a positive effect in the nervous system, the autonomic nervous system.
Yes, I instantly, and I wrote this down just so could ask you, because you had mentioned yoga, and you know, breathing is a really big part of that. And I think of like the term prana. So I was wondering if maybe you could talk about that and how like that overlaps with what his work is like.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah, I love this question and I love this point. So prana in the yogic perspective, it's an interchangeable term really with many of the other terms like chi or ki in the other traditions, or light in the Northern Andean tradition. It means the same thing. So prana is that life force energy ultimately, and our vital force. You know, what is it to have a sense of universality? And interestingly, this breath is often called resonant breath as well. And the body, we are resonators. You know, we know this when we listen to music, or if you've ever been into a flotation pod, which I have got so much benefit from doing, that sensory deprivation when we can hear our own heartbeat, and it's almost like we can hear the hum of our own nervous system. We're then much more able to realize from a pranic regulation perspective what's depleting us and what's lighting us up. And of course, that's the sacred art of the homeostatic balance. You know, the body is constantly seeking to be in balance, in homeostasis. And maybe this is useful, because if we bring in prana and pranayama, which is also—
I was just about to ask you about pranayama.
Pranayama is, when I went on my first yoga teacher training, which was 11 years ago, I learned it as the extension of the life force energy. And then when I had a little deeper look, because, you know, we evolve, of course, as teachers on the path, and it's a never-ending journey, that prana, which is the life force, that vital force, and yama, meaning to restrain or control. So it's that our capacities, it's not about controlling others, of course, because that gets us into all sorts of problems, but yama as in like that self-restraint, that self-control, I would call that autonomy, really, autonomy and agency, that we can have that autonomy and agency, that restrain over our own life force, which is so easy to get discombobulated around. So it's always this art of recalibrating again and again. And there's a form of pranayama called samavriti, sama meaning same. So this is the Sanskrit, which is a beautiful language, and I love to learn as much of it as possible. I'm not an expert by any means, but I do enjoy learning about it. Vriti meaning kind of fluctuations. So samavriti, same fluctuations. It's almost like, okay, and sometimes Sanskrit has double meanings or even triple meanings. It's quite a magical language because it's so ancient. That samavriti is like the same wave. You'll often hear it called, okay, samavriti is this same wave. So it comes in, we inhale, that ocean wave rises up, and then we exhale, the ocean wave flows away again. So when it comes to, and what I love about Stephen is that he's got that engineering mind, which I don't. So I like to learn from people where I'm like, well, that's really interesting because I wouldn't have come up with that. But he calls it the Valsalva wave, that there is this, when we breathe coherently, and this is what's so compelling, and I love this imagery, that he has a graph which shows where, and it's measured. So it's measured at the earlobe. He has an instrument that measures it. When we shallow breathe, we don't access sort of a deeper rhythm in our own capillary network. When we breathe coherently, so when we're in an even inhale to an even exhale, you get a proper wave recorded in the breath. So if you can visualize in your mind's eye, you know, like an up and a down, an up and a down, rather than a, which when we're stressed or anxious, we can feel that freneticism in our nervous system. It's palpable, and, you know, it comes out in shaking or, you know, heart palpitations or a gripped jaw or whatever it is. It's very for every person. But what's really fascinating about the samavriti, the coherence, is it takes the pressure off the heart. And in modern times, there's so much cardiovascular issue. There's so much metabolic syndrome. There's so much obesity. So the heart is really overloaded in what it's doing. So even if we look at the metaphysical of that, the symbolism of, are we all like heartbroken? To breathe coherently is to come into, is to really bring in the orchestra of the entire capillary network, rather than that shallow, stressed breathing where the heart is kind of really laboring. When we slow the breath down, and we breathe, so like almost like the capillaries at the tips of our toes, the tips of our fingers, they're all coming in. And it's such a wholesome way to breathe, because you're really bringing in the whole of that network. So it takes the pressure off the heart, so the heart can do what it's meant to do, which is, you know, help us thrive, help us, you know, have vascular health in the system.
Yeah, I have like so many questions, but what you just said reminds me of, so we had discussed how her and I are working through grief right now. And one thing I learned was that, so our immune systems can tank when we're going through that. And what will have a bit common occurrence is upper respiratory issues. And so we were speaking with one of our friends, mm-hmm. and she told us that it's because of the heart and like the heart chakra, because you're experiencing that, like, you know, heart pain, metaphorically speaking,
extreme pain.
And yeah. So it's causing you to have issues with like the lungs, and your upper respiratory system is going through it. But like what you're saying, it kind of overlaps for me, because it's like whenever you are going through that, your heart is beating like really crazy and you're not breathing well. So then it's like, well, it makes sense that there's going to be these like upper respiratory issues, because you're like, we're not coping, you know, in a way that is good for those two functions in our body. So I think that's really interesting. Yeah, for sure. Like just that, the physical, like the world explanation, like you're not breathing right, you're stressed, your heart's beating like crazy, like, you know, and your immune system's tanked, but then also that spiritual side of it, that you are having heart, your heart is, you know,
yeah,
like I said, metaphorically broken. Like that's so interesting.
It's amazing to me how much just focusing on your breath can change and
regulate let's go with it. I like it.
How it helps regulate your entire nervous system.
It absolutely does. And let me just mark some of that. So when it comes to grief, you know, there's that loss that can feel so painful. And it's very individual too. You know, there might be other things involved that are demanding organization skills as well whilst you're, you know, so it's complex, isn't it? And this is what I love, like the more that I learn about the chakras as energy systems, and Anadeya Judith actually does a lot of beautiful work around this. Her book that she wrote on the chakras in, I think it was back in the 80s or 90s, and she still is sharing work now. But her work that she did around the effect of breathing in that book about the chakras is so good. So it's all there. It's just like we were discussing before we recorded, it's this rich braid, it's all interconnected. And that's why I love what I will say also about Stephen, just in case people are thinking, oh, he's, you know, scientist and engineer. He is also incredibly seeped and saturated in Qigong practices. So his interest came originally from his own question to what is the awakened self. So I think that's a really important piece for me to put in, because it's not and I think you both know me well enough by now that I don't want to talk about mechanistic stuff. However, it's really interesting to talk about things like mechanoreceptors or pulmonary stretch receptors, how the diaphragm, when we breathe slower and deeper, is massaging the heart. I mean, this is just incredibly beautiful and incredibly simple. And it's a huge missing piece in mainstream medicine. It's so lacking, and it's really inexcusable for it to be so at this stage. And where I see these things, so people like Steve who's doing this work quite quietly on the fringes, just like the neuroscientists who are doing work quite quietly, you know, the dancers that became neuroscientists, or the PE teachers that have become neuropsychologists, because they've been on the ground looking at stuff and then wanting to bring in another way into education systems, medical systems, health systems, all, because life is full of systems and processes. Our body is a myriad of processes. It's so vast. And I think equipping people with some beautiful, simple and practical foundations of their breath, it's so important, and it matters so much for so many reasons. And it is vast. So it's like, it doesn't mean that, oh God, I got to completely get to grips with coherent breathing and no other breathing matters. That's not it. I say that as somebody who's practiced all kinds of different breath work and pranayama. But what I do know is that it doesn't have any contraindications. And when, you know, if I'm working with people who are in recovery, or if they've had neural injury, or they're going through recovery from a kidney transplant or a cancer diagnosis whilst they're pregnant, you know, these are very nuanced, complex situations. Having something that is safe, effective, and no contraindications, and has all these wonderful explanations behind it, as well as you having your own complete sovereignty to experience it how you will in your unique landscape, it's just so valuable. I really, really think so.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if he had developed his technique from a yoga meditation standpoint. So it's really cool that, you know, you explained how he found it. Because I think of like pranayama, like we had talked about, it is supposed to be very healing, like when you get into it. And it's like really cool that it is healing. I know we do Reiki, and Ki is essentially like prana.
Yeah.
And that it is like this healing energy that like comes through you, you know, like you're dealing with life force energy, like air is life, you know, essentially.
So, but the pranayama, yes, because I'm a yoga teacher. I have done, you know, many thousands of hours of training as well as teaching. So what is interesting to me is that there can be, you know, I would not go and do Kapalabhati, for example, with a group of people that I'm new to, because it can be absolutely contraindicated for people on the verge of any kind of psychosis. If they've had any digestive surgery, you don't want them to be doing breath of fire. So Kapalabhati, its translation is actually skull shining breath. That's what Kapalabhati translates to. But it's often known as breath of fire. You might have practiced it, or you might have heard of it.
Familiar with like the term, but I've not. I've done what I've been told to do in yoga.
This is exactly it. And this is what, like, the yoga world is changing. And I'm so excited. So I've been doing a lot in sort of recent years about embodied yoga. And it's not fancy schmancy. It's just understanding things like interoception and proprioception. So what is it to embody, like, our heartbeat? What is it to embody our digestive and metabolic rate? So that, again, this is very nuanced, and embodiment is counterculture. You know, you go into any room, you go into any yoga room, as an example, a lot of people are disembodied. So this is why I found that the arc of my teaching, I was never drawn to teaching in studios for this reason, because I think that there can be a lot of propping, there can be a lot of peacocking that goes on. That being said, I've spent lots of time myself as a student in yoga studios. So I'm saying that you are allowed to have discernment. If a teacher offers you something that doesn't feel right for you, it's okay to not do it. Because weird stuff happens in yoga spaces. So it's important that you trust the teacher you're with. And there's nothing wrong. Like, if you trust them, then of course you're going to go, oh, well, this is what the teacher's guiding. Oh, this feels good. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, of course. But you are allowed to ask questions. And there's all sorts of weird stuff that can develop. Sometimes yoga teachers can become a little bit power hungry. There's a lot of sexual predatory behavior that happens, always with male teachers. So I'm just kind of putting that out there, because it's a reminder. Just because we've gone to see a yoga teacher, it doesn't mean that they have all the answers. And I include myself in that. So if somebody wants to ask me a question, of course, it's completely fine. Or if somebody wants to explain their unique circumstance so I can best support them, that's completely fine. And that's where linguistics becomes so key. How do we cue things? It's not just warrior one, warrior two, cobra, because that's like, what are you doing? That's not yoga. That's really not it.
It's an intensive.
Yeah, it's like, what's wrong with you?
CrossFit version.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, the people you meet on yoga training, sometimes, you know, you have to go, ooh. I'm just saying that because a lot of wounded people come to yoga, and then they act it out in the yoga room. A lot of people come to yoga for beautiful reasons. And I have, you know, I have so many amazing teachers that would never behave in any other way than in complete integrity and understanding and humor as well. And that they don't know all the answers, because it's really important that it comes back to that agency and autonomy. It's, you don't want to go into a room where you feel, oh God, that person seems like they're stretching really well. I better try and emanate that. Like, no, you'll injure yourself. Everyone's very different, you know? Some people might have had a hip replacement, for example.
yeah, that's actually been like a big, I've been afraid to like do yoga. And I met this girl at the art studio who's a yoga teacher, and I was trying to talk to her about, because I popped out the hip in a yoga setting, but that joint that wasn't secure, like anyways, it wasn't like, but that's what caused it, me having to get that surgery sooner. But I think that I'm glad I did get it sooner. Like, I think everything happens for a reason. And I was doing at-home yoga for that, so there wasn't a teacher. So that could have also been part of it. in my you know, the universe. Like, I was just doing, like, a YouTube video. Yeah, and it was a really simple thing. It was just like bringing my knees up to my chest, but that movement caused that one hip to, and that's what like kind of got in my head. I was like, that simple movement caused me to, I like, you had to turn a certain way too for it. So I think the combination of them both made it pop out. And then ever since I've gotten the surgery, I've been nervous to do it again. So I've done, how's it, yin yoga? It's like seated. Yeah. I've been comfortable with that. So I feel like I have to slowly progress into like other forms of yoga again. And
maybe you should do the vinyasa flow.
Yeah, I used to do vinyasa.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, but that's what's like beautiful about yoga. There's so much to it and there's so many different versions of it. And yeah, I like it.
Let's get back on.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because let's really, go back to the beauty like of my yoga.
From hips to the breath. But this is a really good, useful detour because it helps for people to hear that. You know, that a seemingly simple movement, because only you are in your body and the embodiment is like deeply listening. And it's okay that it happened. Like you say, it happens for a reason and you've got the surgery and it feels much better. But just like the breath is the foundation of the yoga practice. So this is often very much overlooked because the poses are supposed to enhance and optimize health. It's not about a performance, and there can be a big performative aspect that comes into it. So my first yoga teacher training was in vinyasa, and that was when I was in my 30s, and you know, I had a really good functioning kidney transplant. I was on no meds, which is highly irregular and unusual for that kind of circumstance. So that, you know, things change, and our sadhana, really, which is another Sanskrit word, our sadhana means discipline or commitment. It's our psycho-spiritual practices. And again, that toolkit can change as we change. So it's to your point of yoga is so, there's so many different ways to access it. But it ultimately means integration, and the breath is the pillar, the cornerstone of it. And of course we want to strengthen and condition. And I'm a big fan of yin yoga. I teach it regularly. But there can be contraindications in yin yoga, just as there can be contraindications in a more dynamic yang yoga. So it's again just about listening and sensing and feeling. And that's what the embodiment is. Can we sense? Can we come into more sensation? Because sensation is information. And what's amazing is that when we're more in tune with our breathing, we're more intimate with ourselves, and that's not always pleasant. It's like, oh no, I've just realized I'm a total asshole. Or, oh no, I've just realized I'm so upset. I don't think I'll ever get out of this black hole. This is all normal. It's to really, you know, the two key foundations of a meditation practice, and there are many different ways to meditate. Meditation is a key part of yoga, is awareness of breath and awareness of body. So sometimes it can be so helpful, even if we're a seasoned yoga practitioner or body worker, just to have those reminders, awareness of breath, awareness of body, so that when we experience that on the mat, I like to call it the magic carpet. It's like, oh, what's going to happen on the magic carpet today? Is that, yeah, oh gosh, I seem to be crying uncontrollably, and that's my yoga practice today. Or I seem to be just laughing because why not? I'm in the house on my own. I'm just going to laugh like a maniac and see how that feels. And did you know laughter is one of the best ways to exercise your abdominals? You know, like, people, it's all free. It's all in plain sight. Just laugh every day and you'll have a six pack.
So I'm helping people with their abdominal muscles.
We laugh a lot.
And we make people laugh.
Yeah. It's so lovely. And endorphins, you know, it feels good to laugh. We can get high on our own laughter. And our own breathing. So if I circle back a bit more on different forms of pranayama, just so I suppose it's useful in the setting of something that is coherent and balanced, that there can be other things like lion's breath. So if we're very angry, or we're feeling like we need to energize something, or we're doing some work around our throat chakra, or, you know, the upper respiratory stuff, which is very important. Like, if we're mouth breathing, we're much more prone to be getting upper respiratory tract infections. So
your nose gets stuffy when you cry. Just so that I just thought of that. I just connected that when I, you know, like grief, like your nose gets stuffy when you're crying.
That's so weird. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, this conversation has me fully
very enlightening in my life. Yeah. In my cycles of sickness.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It's really incredible. Wow. It's like you're connecting dots right now for us.
I love that phrase because this is something that I've been loving. Like pattern recognition, recognize the pattern and then connect the dots. And then rinse and repeat, you know, because that's what it is. It is, like for those light bulb moments, and may we all have many of them through our lifetimes. And sometimes they're small and we think that they're so insignificant because they're small. They're not, because change happens in increments. Step by step, we climb our mountain. And I think when it comes to, you know, to the point of, that's such a great point. I love it. When we're crying, we're probably, you know, whatever. We're probably not calmly, coherently breathing. Absolutely not.
No.
If we're stuffy, like congested, and congestion begets congestion. So it's just knowing that what I will caveat is please put no expectation upon yourself to be coherently breathing at all times. Because then that just becomes another mental quirk and fixation. And what's interesting is with Stephen's research, that 20 minutes of coherent breathing a day has positive effect in the nervous system and all systems within the body, you know, respiratory, digestive, metabolic, for the next 24 hours. So, isn't that right? Right?
That's phenomenal.
It's incredible. And what I say also is, because I know sometimes, especially if people are newer to this, 20 minutes can be, it's like, oh no, I can't do that. You know, it's too much of a commitment. So just, okay, 5 minutes is better than no minutes. Start somewhere so that you're ultimately getting into that groove of accessing, firstly, reminding the body-mind system, which is so complex, of the relaxation response. It comes back to this hum in the nervous system that so many, and you'll know this in the work that you both do, so many people are going around with their nervous system screeching, but they don't know it. They think they're fine, but they're actually, because they're always doing something, or distraction to distraction to distraction, status, materiality, distraction, status, who do I need to please now? Who do I need validation from now? And we can all get stuck in that cycle. I know I've had that cycle of, oh, Mr. Nephrologist, I'm as clever as you. Whereas, you know, I don't need to do that. That's way too much pressure to put on myself. I don't need to prove anything to medics, as an example. When I'm myself, I'm more relaxed, and then they'll get more out of me. Like, it'll be more beneficial. Like, oh, she's actually quite interesting. So can we give the best of ourselves? And breathing helps us do this. It doesn't mean if we're in a highly anxious state, it's probably going to be very challenging. And it's important to say that it's not, oh, okay, we're just going to do 5 minutes of coherent breathing. And there you are, set for life. You know exactly what to do. Because of, there might be a deviated septum. There might be something happening in the jaw. A really good book that came out, and I know breath is very much in the zeitgeist and has been for, you know, certainly the past 2 or 3 years in terms of it becoming more populist, which is good. You know, you've got Wim Hof as well doing his thing. But James Nestor, the science journalist, in 2020, his book called Breath, The New Science of Lost Art, was published. And there's some really, really good stories in there. Now, he's an American, and he kind of went on his own mission, which is often the case, isn't it, that we launch our own missions from our own experiences. He had this whole overcrowding situation in his mouth from being raised from a young toddler on brown food. So no real fiber to chew on and develop the masseter muscle or the structure of the jawline. So a lot of sort of thin chin sort of thing going on. Mm. And that matters. If you talk to any dentist or orthodontist, they will say, yeah, sure, we see this all the time. Because people aren't, you know, chomping down on a carrot and a big plate of greens. It's your fiber matters to the structure of our development. So this is really interesting, isn't it? You know, it's often overlooked. We already know that nutrition has such an impact, but from a structural perspective, we need to chew to develop the jawline.
More hot chew.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Eat healthy. Yeah.
Breathe.
Your skin will glow. Your jaw will look good.
Yeah.
So it's like going to manifest physically for you too. Yeah. That's really interesting.
And it makes you think, like, why don't we all take more time to consciously take care of that? Yeah. As simple as just breathing for 20 minutes and eat, just moving consciously, eating consciously has a structural impact on our physiques. That's insane.
Yeah.
I didn't even think
I'm looking at his website, Steve Elliott's. And he said essential hypertension is a pandemic in the United States. Yes. So that could be why.
Yes. Yes, it's great. And don't be put off by his, it's quite an old-fashioned looking website, but there's a lot of really good information on there. And it's quite refreshing as well, because he's not a sort of a celebrity. There's lots of, I mean, maybe you've come across Dr. Huberman, who's hugely popular now on YouTube. But actually a few years ago when I studied with a breath teacher, Huberman is a neuroscientist, basically, and he does a lot around breath work. And that, so I suppose, and it's not to compare, but I like to make contact with people who are just doing their thing, and they're not making too much noise about it, so that the people who they share it with, it resonates more strongly. I don't know about how you feel, but it's just there's so much information out there now, but public health continues to worsen. So there's a complete discorrelate. It's not like, well, you go look on YouTube and learn how to breathe. If it were that simple, there would be no stress, anxiety, you know, and these are epidemics. Just like
hypertension
is, you're not breathing properly, you're eating foods that don't serve you. But these have been years in the making, and there's things behind it. So our autonomy comes back to the choices we make and those small measures of change. And it's not easy, you know, if people are living with sugar addiction, or, you know, they've become emotional eaters because of some terrible sexual abuse in childhood. These are not easy things to fix. So it's, I'm never going to say, well, just, you know, eat better and breathe better. Yeah, I can say, yeah, eat better and breathe better. But it's like a lot of people go, how do I do that?
Well, it's what you said earlier, just 5 minutes a day of this conscious breathing, 5 minutes of meditation, eventually switching out certain things in your diet, eventually you will progress to the level where you need to be. And just starting out simply is where everybody should start. Just start, just try.
Amen.
It's like a practice, I feel like. Yeah. It's like any new skill you're learning, you have to practice. I have a question. Hopefully it doesn't derail us,
please.
But it's about coherent breathing. I want to know, like, if you are experiencing you're in an emotional state, so like anxiety, stress, whatever, that makes it hard to focus on your breath, can focusing on it help with your situation if you're able to? And if so, what are your tips to like get into that?
Yeah. So yes, it can. And also it depends. Okay. In August, I went to Sweden, which was amazing. I'd never been sort of up to the Nordics before. So it kind of symbolized going true north, which has been a big sort of piece of my year, going true, you know, what is true north? Finding true north, the North Star. But tips around, I would say this. So the training basically in Sweden was sacred dance, with a wonderful teacher, Brahmani Yoga, Julie Martin. She's brilliant. She's a sassy American. She's in her late 50s. And, you know, she's seen the whole LA scene and she's been through it all and she's done it. She's great. So somebody might listen and go, sacred dance? Not sure about that. If I call it freestyle movement instead, and I think this is something that certainly women have done for millennia, move, to just move your body. So say, for example, you're having a really tough time expressing an emotion or there's an uncomfortable feeling. You're absolutely right. It can be really difficult to like, okay, I'm just going to sit and focus on my breath because there's too much agitation or there's too much heaviness or whatever the too much is. If we move, if we put on a favorite song, or a song that we know is just going to help us. And it doesn't matter how we move, just move. There's more and more beautiful research and information now coming in around movement. And it makes sense. It makes sense. Why do people love going dancing? Why does it feel so good to kind of like start sinking to a beat? It feels good. It's resonance. And we are resonators. Our bodies are resonators. So that's what I would offer. I would say, if you're finding it very difficult to sort of sit down
and breathe. And I do have a podcast on coherent breathing. It's 20 minutes of guided coherent breath, because when we're starting out, yeah, it's really helpful to have that support. So you can just go, okay, not going to cost me anything. There's a podcast. And it's my most popular podcast, which speaks volumes, doesn't it? Like, I could talk about all fascinating stuff. It's like, no, give me the 20 minutes coherent breathing. And that will do me. So I'll send you that episode, and then people can try it out for themselves. Like, give it a go, experience it for yourself, but be willing. Like, the effects of anything are cumulative. So if you find it challenging to begin with, it's okay. Please know that that's entirely normal. And you might find that 20 minutes goes by, you've gone beyond the space-time continuum. That can happen too. It's like, oh my gosh, it's finished already. I went somewhere incredible. I feel so connected. So let's sow that seed for people as well. But yeah, the movement to move, and then maybe see how the coherent breathing can be, or just connecting with the breath so that we're allowing something to move. You know, I think Einstein, to paraphrase him, he said, you know, nothing changes until something moves. Move, just move it out of your system. There's a reason why people love ecstatic dance. And actually, ecstasy, if we look at it as a word, the etymology of it, it just simply means moving out of stasis. It's so incredible. And these are things, like, when it comes to embodiment, what I often do in my classes is just go, okay, let's just hang out and do a few minutes of freestyle movement. And people just, you know, bit of shaking, or, you know, getting down on the floor, rolling around, whatever it is. It can be really useful if we're feeling very overwhelmed, for example, to just get down on the floor. Just get down on the floor. Just do that. Like, it just, you know, earth me. Let me lower my center of gravity. Because one of the key laws of physics is the gravitational pull. We are pulled to this earth. And to really feel that, that's our proprioception. So how do we know we're sitting? How do we know we're standing? How do we know we're lying down? We have all these proprioceptors in the body. How do we know we're upside down? We need to know that information, otherwise we'd be unbound. Like, oh, yes, that person's got no clothes on. They didn't know that they've got no clothes on. How do we know that we've got clothes on? It sounds so obvious, doesn't it? But it's biofeedback from the body.
Wow, that's so interesting. You know, I adopted the laying on the ground from an earlier episode of yours that we had you on. I forget which episode and what we were talking about, but you were saying to just lay on the ground. And I started doing that whenever I feel like I need a minute. I feel like there's too much going on in my head, or when I get stressed, my muscles get so horribly tight in my neck and upper back. Mm-hmm. So then I got that from you. I'll just lay on the ground for a minute to get clarity.
Sky joins you.
Yeah, the cat does, but it helps. So I definitely, you know, thank you for sharing that. And
This breathing is definitely going to help me significantly. I tend to do, when I'm stressed, I do the deep breathing. Mm-hmm. I'll just take a moment and just get it out.
Yeah. I feel the shallow breathing and heart palpitations whenever I'm feeling it. Yeah. So I think that's going to help.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was really interesting how you said breathing can massage the heart.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. It's so incredible. And thank you for saying about the ground. I love that I already had said that in an earlier episode. That's good. At least I'm consistent in one thing. that's really heartening for me. But yeah, just around, if we talk a little bit more about the diaphragm, because it's such an amazing, to call it a structure just seems a bit unfair, because it's let's imagine it as a parachute or a jellyfish. So something that's malleable, something that's movable. And so it has all, on its own, it's quite a thin sheath. It's, you know, it's not this big chunky thing. It's quite thin. It's my osteopath friend described it as like a curtain between two rooms. So rather than using medical vernacular the chest cavity, the abdominal cavity, it's the curtain between two rooms. I think that sounds so lovely. It's like this curtain between these two rooms of upper and lower body. And when we are breathing at that even rate and rhythm, or even just becoming aware that we're able to slow the breath down. The diaphragm is able to move. And what is incredible is that it has, so fascia is our connective tissue. We've got loads of connective tissue throughout the body, including in our vascular system. So, to, you know, smooth muscle and fascia. We even have fascial sutures in our skull, so that even when we feel like, oh no, I'm locked into my own head, even knowing that we have fascial sutures, you know, there's a slight changes in intracranial pressure. So we're never locked into an idea of who we are. It's always malleable, it's always fluid. But the diaphragm has fascial attachments that run down into the adrenal glands. So these are the bean-shaped glands that sit on top of each kidney. So they're in the back body. And like any of the endocrine glands, they are incredibly powerful. But it is all about dosage. The difference between a poison and medicine is dosage. And our hormones are no exception. If we are saturating in adrenaline and cortisol, which are the key hormones of the adrenal glands, I think in America they're known as epinephrine and norepinephrine, the adrenaline. So in case that's useful, it's very difficult to access that feeling of calm abiding if our physiology is in high alert. And I know we talked the last episode a bit about hypervigilance, but it's just knowing that when we breathe a bit deeper, that diaphragm is moving, the massage action in the heart is happening, we're gathering in the support of all the capillary networks, which loosens the burden on the heart. And we're also calming the adrenal response, which is complex. So, and you might know this already, but the HPA axis, the hypothalamus that speaks to the pituitary in the brain, the pituitary is a very key orchestrator to our hormone signaling. And then through another cascade of hormones, speaks to the adrenal glands. So deep breathing is helping to settle that. Deep breathing is also helping with vagal tone. So the vagus nerve is the 10th cranial nerve. We have 12 cranial nerves. And this is, I remember when I started learning about it, I think it was actually studying nutrition I first came across it. It's like, oh, vagal nerve, it must be just this one long line of a nerve. No, it's this incredible bundling of parasympathetic nervous system fibers. So where you were saying about that sort of flushing or that palpitation across the chest, a lot of our sympathetic fibers reside there, you know, because we want to have adrenaline and cortisol are amazing. So I in no way want to demonize them. They're amazing. Otherwise, we'd be sloths getting nothing done. We'd be like, oh, I think I'll just stay in bed all day and never do anything again. So we need that zhuzh. They're kind of like our yang hormones, if you like. They're the energy of Surya, of the sun. But if we're in that hypervigilant state, or we're in that passion of shallow breathing, which can happen again for many reasons, we're more likely to be highly activated across the sympathetic nerve fibers that are supra-diaphragmatic, so above the diaphragm. And this is why, well, try this now. Just swallow deeply. Let's take a moment and swallow deeply. And then maybe just take a deep breath after that. Yeah. And just to swallow, the action of swallowing is also just a gentle signal to the vagus nerve to slow down. So we have some of these parasympathetic nerve fibers of the vagus nerve that are quite close to muscles in the neck called the scalenes. So, and I totally empathize with pain in neck, pain in jaw. And what I've realized is that's always a warning sign for me that my nervous system needs some love. It's never about a muscular, it's never local. It's never really about the neck. It's about my nervous system is a little bit agitated or a lot. So the swallowing deeply, the taking a breath, that through practice and through commitment, just like anything, you know, just like you were saying around small steps, simple. We switch something out. We start something out. We fall off the wagon, we come back on. But just simple things are the incredible things. Because then it builds confidence that we can actually take care of ourselves, and that we're worth that, we're valuable.
Wow.
Yeah.
It is something. Like reading your book made me feel like I had more power in taking care of my body. Because I feel like we can often feel like we don't really have power. Like our bodies are going to do what they're going to do, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Like if you're sick, you're sick kind of thing. But like what you're speaking about and like reading your work and everything, it's very empowering in that regard. You can take steps to overcome certain things and
to better heal your existence. And
yeah, that's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
In a natural way, not in a clinical setting.
Like you're not necessarily at the will of the medical professionals all the time. Because that can be like disempowering if you're just waiting for the doc. Like, I don't want to phrase it like we don't, like we need doctors, obviously. And like, we should trust their guidance and their wisdom. But like, we play a part in our healing as well, because it's our body.
Absolutely. It's so true. You know, I find that I think it's important for me in the work that I'm doing that I'm able to access that balance, because more and more I do talk to medics and I'm working more with them. I had an amazing week in October with a professor of nephrology and obstetrics that came over from Melbourne to Ramsgate, to where I live. And so there are very open-minded people in the system. And I think it's really important to remember that. It is also important to remember that, because sometimes we'll walk into a setting and maybe that person is grief stricken and they don't know how to manage it, and they have to go to work and they have to, you know, do the biopsy or do the surgery or whatever they have to do. So there is a level of professionalism and competence that is really expected of them. There's high expectations on these as a group of people, and they are fallible. They are human. And it's so important to recognize that we as a patient, when we're in that role, we are part of the healthcare team. It is so important. We're a team. And even if there's resistance or if there's lack of understanding, that we're met with resistance, we have to trust and even set that as an intention. That, and that's what I did with my second kidney transplant. I took it on as a project. I'm like, I'm going to, the anesthetist, the surgeon, the transplant nurses that are going to take care of me, because I'll need all that care, you know, especially in the first week. So I'm really glad that I had access to that realization. And I'm really glad also that I'm able to speak a little bit more articulately now with medics, because I've learned how to be more myself. I don't have to compete with them. I don't have to do some sort of intelligence contest with them. Because that's just not necessary. And they certainly don't expect that of me anyway. They probably have no clue the deep machinations of my mind and what I'm going on and like worrying about, oh God, they don't know who I am. Or, you know, that's not their problem. That's my problem.
Yeah.
So to kind of switch that up, and we can do both. You know, I can serve people who need help in a medical setting. I can also serve medics, because then, you know, they need that help too. So it's a process for sure. And some of the most frustrating situations I've had have been in a clinical setting with a doctor. It's not with nurses. It's always with doctors. And that's that conclusion I've come to after a lot of reflection. I'm like, oh, actually. And not always. You know, I sometimes have great experiences with doctors. So, but we do have the negativity bias that we hang on to the time that I felt at risk or the time I wasn't heard. It's not like that all the time.
Yeah, let's pull up his website for coherent breathing while we've been talking. And he has like a timer. There's all these resources on his website as well. Yeah, this is really
very cool. Yeah. We're going to deep dive into this.
Oh, I'm so pleased. And he's I'll send you on, because he's doing a free session on one of his other techniques that I really like. It's very useful for blood pressure as well. And kidneys and blood pressure, they have a very intricate relationship. He calls it six bridges breathing, and it's basically tapping into, and it really is the body. And so I'm kind of like doing a slightly different twist and calling it embodied coherent breathing. But the six bridges is, well, say, for example, if you just start to gently open and close your hands, like make little fists and then open them, that is one of the bridges. So we're tapping into parts of the body that naturally contract and expand. And then, you know, through guidance, you can then start to do the coherent breathing with those movements. So with the hands, with the toes, with the eyes, with the diaphragm, with Mula Bandha, the pelvic floor. So that is also, I mean, again, this can be a lot. It could take many workshops to kind of land in that. But sometimes it's enough to just do one. You know, you could do the coherent breathing with just opening and closing the hands, because the eyes, as such key switches for the brain, can be very intense to work with if we've got a very agitated nervous system. So it doesn't mean we don't do it, but it just means to be aware that these, you know, people can get instant headaches. It's taking sips. And I'll share this because I think it's really valuable as well. I've started doing some sessions with these lovely two sisters and their stepmother. And we started with, you know, this introduction to coherent breathing. And the next week they came back and one of them had shared, oh yeah, it never ceased to amaze me. It's just like you looking up Stephen Elliott's website. I love that. So she'd gone off, because obviously I'd talked about Stephen Elliott, life scientist and engineer, one of my strap lines. She'd gone off and listened to, I think, something of his. And had been doing 3 hours of hoovering and was doing the coherent breath at the same time. And she'd already had all of these lung issues. She'd had COVID several times. She'd had all this other stuff going on. And so she said, yeah, I woke up at about 2 a.m. I was violently ill. And it felt like I was coughing up from the deepest chambers of my lungs. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. But that is just a reminder, please, like baby steps, if you're new to this, for those listening, if this is new, like it's 5 minutes is enough to start with. I still admire her tenacity to go off and do 3 hours of hoovering and do the coherent breath at the same time.
Wow.
It was like, wow, there's some gunge coming up and out of me. So yeah, there can be a lot of stuff like that can stagnate in the lower lobes of the lungs because we're not accessing it when we're shallow breathing. And she also has a lot of pain issues with her back. And it's, you know, this stuff is breathe and everything changes. It really is so true.
So I had a thought. So in regards to, like, you've mentioned movement and exercising, is it, yeah, like we think, like, oh, it's beneficial because it helps our muscles, but it almost forces you to breathe, like when you're doing, like running or anything that's, what is it?
Active.
Yeah, like very active. So is that a form of like breath work? Could that be considered a way to get into it without getting into it? Like if you're having a hard time, like get on a treadmill or something like that.
Take a walk.
And are they, is it like the same benefits that you can get? Like if you do intense, the word is escaping me, but like running, things that like cause you to like your heart to
cardiovascular.
Yeah, like those types of workouts. Because I feel like they would force you to like take in deeper breaths.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a few ways to answer that. So again, it's the old, it depends.
Okay.
So yeah, it depends is the answer to that question around, you know, breathing as a way in by doing something a bit more cardiovascularly. is if you're already kind of quite in tune with the body, then yes. If that was your first entry point, then simply just set an intention, I would counsel, to just be aware of your breathing. I think it's a lot to expect if you haven't already got a foundational connection or relationship with your breathing already, and then you start running, it can be a lot, you know, the whole breathing through the nose and stuff like that. Whereas walking is it's more accessible. And I've had people who, where I do these coherent breath workshops in many different settings now, but some of my regulars, I will get, you know, oh, you know, I did the coherent breathing when I was going for a walk, or, oh, I did the coherent breathing in the car between clients, or, oh, I did the coherent breathing between patients. So there's all sorts of, it's like making it work for you. In terms of the benefits, I think walking, as so long as you feel like it's still, you're still able to be present with yourself. If you're more on the sort of elite athlete side, then the likelihood is that you have a very good relationship with your breath anyway. Certainly marathon runners and anything that requires that level of endurance, you have to have that sort of pacing, and yeah, so the sort of the sinusoidal wave of the breath, Steve talks about this a little bit as well, but if we think where the sinus atrium is in the sort of the upper back wall of the right side of the heart, the right atrium. And that's the same place, which is really incredible and beautiful, that we get the impulse from our mother when we're growing in embryo. So at about 21 days, the impulse from her sinoatrial node is what speaks to our pre-myocardial cells in our forming heart that starts to innervate it and they start to beat. before the heart then forms in all these incredible twists and spirals. So in some teachings, you'll hear that, you know, the right side of the heart is the spiritual heart. And when I learned about the SA node, I'm like, oh my gosh, well, that's what gives us the impulse of life. That's what we get from our mother. That's what starts the whole thing. So it's like all of these things are so interconnected and so beautiful and so magically insightful. It's all within the body and our own incredible inner architecture. So yeah, when it comes to cardiovascular stuff, to be honest, I would be much more interested, especially, you know, I'm in my 40s now, and there's nothing to stop you from doing it when you're younger. Strength training, and, you know, building that. Can you do a 1 minute in plank, for example, and making sure that it's a good form, that sort of bone building, because we continue to build bone. It's a falseness that, you know, oh, we stop building bone after 30. That's completely untrue. We're always, bone is a living tissue. So weight bearing stuff. These are just sort of personal things that I've come to learn the more I know about the body and anatomy, and what sort of lights people up. So if you love running, that's great. I think if you can do it non-impact, so not on tarmac, because that can be very abrasive and can cause sort of knee issues over time. So again, it's sort of, it's nuanced. And what's interesting is that I joined the local leisure center here in Ramsgate, mostly because they have a thermal spa and I go and kind of do the steam room and then stand under a cold ice bucket. That can be really, really good as well. But I thought, oh, you know, seeing as I've got my membership, I may as well go to some classes. But, and this could be my own sort of, my own stuff, my own irritations, but I'm so acutely aware now of linguistics and how things are languaged. So going to an exercise class now where the teacher has a microphone headset, which is completely unnecessary. It's not like it's a massive space. And then music that is not always a very good choice of music. And there's no instruction that is helpful to sort of get into the body. It's very formulaic. That I find that I was actually getting in quite a bad mood. I was like, God, why, you know, I'm doing a lot of movement. Why am I getting in a bad mood? I think, oh gosh, I think that because there's such a disconnect between the body and that and those classes, I wasn't enjoying it. So I've come back to doing my own practice at home. And I really noticed the difference. Of course, you know, if you have access, if it's the YMCA and you're going to classes there, I don't mean to decry public classes. I'm just saying, just be aware that, again, it's okay if something is suggested. You don't have to do it. And there's also this thing that the announcement on the microphone, anyone got any injuries or health issues I need to be aware of? Oh, yeah, I've had 2 kidney transplants. I mean, it's just not going to happen. Firstly, I know how to take care of myself, but I would never dream of doing that in an open yoga class, unless everyone knows each other and has, is very safe to share information, because some of that can be very personal.
Yeah.
Very personal. It could be like, oh, I've just had a hysterectomy. Mm-hmm. You don't want to say that. And, you know, it's like, so those kind of things I just find interesting. So it's just about it's all about the awareness. And it doesn't mean you can't enjoy the class. It's just, okay, well, I'll leave that bit out, or, okay, I'll recognize that that's just the way that they have to teach, and that's okay. But it needs to change. I think eventually the embodiment will start to seep into sort of gyms and things like that. But you know, that might be a while, yeah. But in the meantime, we can claim our own flesh and bones and tissues and tongues and heartbeats and spaces between our toes. It's just, our bodies are incredible.
Yeah. So I don't think we touched on how one can coherently breathe. So can you explain a little bit about the process?
Yeah. So it's really important that you're comfortable. So feel free. You could be standing, you could be sitting in a chair. If you're comfortable sitting cross-legged on a yoga mat, that's fine, but that's absolutely not a mandatory requirement. You could be lying in bed. You know, a lot of people do this. I gave this tip to a surgeon, and then many months later when I spoke to him, he's like, yeah, you know, that coherent breathing was really helpful. I'm like, oh my God, the surgeon found my breathing tip helpful. But again, you know, the stuff, why wouldn't he? He's human. But it's also, it's interesting, isn't it? So how to do it is, I would say, first of all, get some guidance around it. So, you know, whether you use my podcast or you do a little bit of reading around it, just so you feel informed in a way that is useful for you. And to be in a relaxed state, the mouth is softly sealed. So this is where the nose breathing comes in. And you might begin by noticing that, oh gosh, I tend to mouth breathe a lot. And that can be a really great revelation. That's amazing. So rather than thinking, oh no, I mouth breathe, like, oh, I'm recognizing something. It's that connecting the dots, pattern recognition, recognize the pattern, interrupt it. So you can start by just noticing how you feel about breathing through your nose with the mouth softly sealed, tongue is relaxed in the mouth. And then perhaps the rate and rhythm comes a bit later, unless you are, you know, in fairly good shape, because sometimes 4-4 is a better place to start with. The 6-6 might be a bit much for some people. So the 6-6 breathing essentially puts you at about 5 breaths a minute. So if we consider the average person rushing around is breathing much, much quicker than that. So even just having an experience of that, it's normal if you're not used to breathing in that way to feel, you know, a little bit lightheaded. That doesn't always happen, but if it does, that could be it. You know, just carry on doing some breathing. And just take into account your own circumstances. You know, if you have asthma or you have long COVID, or, you know, you're recovering from surgery, or you've had a big life event like a bereavement or a divorce, meet yourself where you're at. And it can be helpful to place your hands on your belly. So you have like your own somatic cue. So somatic meaning of the body in this context. So hands upon belly. So that you're just being curious, is my belly moving when I'm breathing? Because there is a thing, and I've worked with people who have high anxiety and panic attacks, which isn't the greatest name, you know, the panic presentation, where they'll have what's called paradoxical breathing. So when they inhale, their belly goes in. So it's like that, because there's such a brace for impact that's held and recorded in the nervous system that needs loosening. And that's a process, because there's many reasons why that has happened in the first place. So again, if that happens, it's okay. Just don't give up. It's okay. You're recognizing something. You're getting to know yourself better. You know, there's no better way in than your breathing, really. And then with the rate and rhythm, the cadence, you can bring in, so another lever alongside those first three is to start bringing in imagination. So for example, you could breathe in, imagine the ocean wave rising, and breathe out, the ocean wave falls away again. There's many different visualization techniques. So just, you know, that might happen naturally also. It might feel like you're inhaling the sun and exhaling the moon, because there are these energies. The inhale is activating, the exhale is more passive, it's decompressing, it's releasing. Inhale is warming, exhale is cooling. So it really is the yin yang, the Shiva Shakti, the sun, moon. It's all in our breathing. So I think it's great to start with the coherent breath as a foundation, but also knowing that it's also going to take us into the awakened self. And that doesn't need to be rushed. Everyone is in their own process, and that's fine. The other thing you can play around with, and those that are more familiar with yoga, it is likely going to feel more natural, what's called the Ujjayi breathing. So Ujjayi in Sanskrit means victorious breath. So victory over mind-made fears is its intention, really. And it's like you can consider it as akin to a baby snore at the back of the throat. So it's a little bit of a glottal breath. So you start to make almost like you're breathing through an imaginary hole at the front of your throat. So it's, you know, it can feel like it's more like a wind. It doesn't have to be anything aggressive or really loud. It's just, it's that, it kind of taps us into that Schumann's resonance as well. You know, a bit like when a cat is purring. It's very relaxing, isn't it? And you probably calm naturally when you have a cat lying on your belly and purring. You know, stuff like that. So it's really an embodied experience. And so just be kind and patient with yourself, because it could be, if you're tendency is to be very sort of left-brained, very analytical, doesn't mean that's wrong. It just means that you might get caught up in, oh, I've got to do this exactly right. It's okay to just explore it, see how it feels, and you'll do it one day and then you'll do it another day and it will be a different experience. Or it might start to feel like a good friend, because our breath is the ultimate companion. It's the thing, it's the constant, it's the one constant we have in life. People come and go, our breath is there from the first breath we take to the last death exhale. So it's both incredibly simple, practical, and also wildly complex, vast, and nuanced. Does that help?
Yeah, oh, yeah. That was great. Yeah. So we're getting on to an hour. Is there anything else you want to tell our listeners before we close up the episode?
I think I would just say, the more I learn about the adaptability and the intricacy of our nervous system, really embrace getting to know your own nervous system. It is complex and very sensitive, but our skin and our nerves form together in our embryology becomings. So to just trust that you can really be comfortable in the skin you're in and all the many things that that means for you, and that coherence and resonance and universality are always there for you. You're always just a breath away from that repose.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on the show again.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. It fills my heart with absolute joy to just be communing. Today, haven't we? But to be communing with you both. It really is. I always value and treasure it greatly. I look forward to the next time.
Yes, absolutely.